Seekers. Mike Malloy here. Welcome to tonight's program. Did you listen to the speech today? I missed it, but I've read some excerpts and I've heard the commentaries from the pundits, the punditry class who have, left and right. Well, I don't mean that. I mean right and more right. It sounds like the president was a little pissed off. Does it? I'll tell you what. The best take I have on it, I have two of them here. One is from the staff at truthout.org or whoever wrote this. And the first one is from our own Prairie 2, who has text and video of Obama's speech at his website. We'll do that in a second. By the way, this hour is sponsored by James Higgins. He writes, in memory of my mother, Dorothy, who died 6 years ago today from complications of Alzheimer's. I miss you, Mom. Thanks for the sponsorship, James, and a poignant message indeed. All right. This is what Prairie 2 sent to me about a half an hour ago under the subject line, and he finished by lifting the stick high over his head. I'm not sure what that's in reference to. Is that Moses? I don't know. Prairie 2 writes, President Obama invited the Republicans to his speech today and didn't give them copies in advance. Obama then proceeded to tear off their manhood and displayed it on a stick for the approval of the crowd. Oh, I get it. He started with laying the blame for the debt crisis squarely where it belongs. Keep in mind that Clinton's long-term budget would have completely paid off the national debt by 2008. That's true. Bush called the Clinton surplus a peace dividend from Reagan. From Reagan having won the Cold War. And Bush was determined to get rid of all that extra money. Obama on the Republicans' spending. Quote, this is Obama from today. To give you an idea of how much damage this caused to our national checkbook, consider this. In the last decade, if we had simply found a way to pay for the tax cuts and the prescription drug benefit, our deficit currently would be at low historical levels in the coming years. End quote. Later in the speech, Obama lays out what the long-term goal of the Republicans is as the debt grows. Obama, quote, and that means more of your tax dollars will go toward paying off the interest on all the loans we keep taking out. By the end of this decade, the interest we owe on our debt could rise to nearly $1 trillion, just the interest payments, end quote. In reality, Prairie 2 writes, it could get much worse, much faster, if Republicans were to gain control. Much of the debt is paying less than 1% interest because of the world monetary crisis. But it could jump to 10 or 20%, as it did in the early 80s, since the bulk of the debt is on short-term notes. Most Americans think the federal budget is spent on welfare and foreign aid. But Obama laid it out today. Quote, So here's the truth. Around two-thirds of our budget is spent on Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and National Security. Programs like unemployment insurance, student loans, veterans benefits, and tax credits for working families take up another 20%. What's left after interest on the debt is just 12% for everything else. That's 12% for all our other national priorities like education and clean energy, medical research, transportation, food safety, and keeping our air and water clean. Worst of all, Obama continued, this is a vision that says even though America can't afford to invest in education or clean energy, even though we can't afford to care for seniors and poor children, we can somehow afford more than $1 trillion in new tax breaks for the wealthy. Think about it. In the last decade, the average income of the bottom 90% of all working Americans actually declined. End quote. And then Obama, quoting the Republicans, quote, the fact is their vision is less about reducing the deficit than it is about changing the basic social compact in America. As Ronald Reagan's own budget director said, there's nothing serious or courageous about this plan. There's nothing serious about a plan that claims to reduce the deficit by spending $1 trillion on tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires. There's nothing courageous about asking for sacrifice from those who can least afford it and don't have any clout on Capitol Hill, and this is not a vision of the America I know. End quote. Prairie 2 writes, there's much more to this speech, and I personally think it is the best progressive speech any president has given since Eisenhower's Cross of Iron speech. It draws a real line in the sand, and it is a rallying cry for progressives that should break through to all the Reagan Democrats. People in the middle class, and formerly middle class, who saw the Battle of Wisconsin as a wake-up call. This is the first moment of real optimism that I've had in some time. The entire text and a video of Obama's speech is available at prairienumeral2.com. Now, that's Prairie 2's assessment. And we certainly around the Malloy program here respect the opinions and assessments of Bruce Enberg, our economic affairs correspondent, a.k.a. Prairie 2. There is a differing opinion put out at truthout.org. Dear friends, Rachel Maddow described President Obama's speech as a defining moment for this administration, and she was absolutely correct. It was an excellent speech in the main, filled with the kind of lofty rhetoric we have become accustomed to since Mr. Obama first burst onto the political scene in 2004. In it, he proposed taxing the rich, cutting the defense budget, and decreasing the cost of health care. He defended Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. For many in the progressive community, it was a reminder of the man who fired the imagination of so many during his presidential campaign. Therein lies the problem. It was all just words. Again. There have been many such defining moments during this administration, most of which involved retreat, surrender, and failure after festooning the walls with words. We heard great talk about including the public option in the health care bill until Mr. Obama retreated, leaving many to wonder if he ever meant to include it at all. We heard great talk about closing Guantanamo until he retreated. We heard great talk about repealing the Bush tax cuts for rich people until that fell by the wayside as well. The very fact that we are still talking about those damnable tax breaks is evidence enough of how far those words go. And that is not very far at all so far. And then there are the other words in Wednesday's speech, today's speech, the ones that tipped a wink to the Bowles-Simpson proposal to eviscerate the social contract, which has sustained this nation for generations. There were the words, quote, any serious plan to tackle our deficit will require us to put everything on the table, end quote. If that is true, Mr. President, then a plan to provide Medicare for all must also be on the table. But no, that's not reasonable or responsible. The debate over the future of this country has been skewed so far to the right that centrism appears radical, even as the worst elements in our nation win the day, time and time again. We'll be right back.
You measure your peace with guns. Your progress is in megatons. Well, who's left when the war is won? A soldier of misfortune.
You are now entering a flying monkey-free zone.
Take a long walk through a company town. On what used to be solid ground. Nobody was ever gonna get sized down.
21 past the hour, so, Prairie 2 writes a spirited synopsis of the speech, and the fact that it was inspiring, the pieces that he quoted are very inspiring. I mean, when Obama, in a presidential way, calls a son of a bitch a son of a bitch, that would be the Republicans, you know, good for him. But I hate to say this, I really do. We've heard this before. We've heard it time and time and time again. So at what point do you say, I've heard this before, and it's never turned out to be what Mr. Obama said it would be? Kawai John writes, I don't believe him. Obama is lying. Jamie in Maryland writes, Mike, as we all know, Obama can give a good and often inspiring speech, but words without action mean nothing. Many of us have been working our butts off for years on many levels to try to save this country, in addition to our jobs, healthcare, homes, etc. I won't be voting for Obama again. He hasn't earned my vote, to say the least, but I will continue to push back and see if he puts his words into action. Good luck, America. Stephen in Burbank writes, two words, Lucy's football. Yeah. I made a conscious decision today, and I hate to say this because it's kind of embarrassing. I think it displays a kind of weakness on my part. Not that I'm without weaknesses. I'm not. But I consciously chose today not to listen to what Mr. Obama had to say. Not to listen to any kind of a half-assed, ridiculous, stupid, mind-screwing response from any of these corporate Republicans. So I heard, I not only did not hear the speech, I've not listened to any of the response. I've seen little bits and pieces. I saw something on Lawrence O'Donnell's program a few minutes ago. A couple of pieces of video here and there across the broadcast spectrum, but I guess I'm at that point. Well, I'll tell you what. Let me. Have any of you not seen this thing that Jesse Ventura wrote and posted today? He writes, You control our world. You've poisoned the air we breathe, contaminated the water we drink, and copyrighted the food we eat. We fight in your wars, die for your causes, and sacrifice our freedoms to protect you. You've liquidated our savings, destroyed our middle class, and used our tax dollars to bail out your unending greed. We are slaves to your corporations, zombies to your airwaves, servants to your decadence. You've stolen our elections, assassinated our leaders, and abolished our basic rights as human beings. You own our property, shipped away our jobs, and shredded our unions. You've profited off of disaster, destabilized our currencies, and raised our cost of living. You've monopolized our freedom, stripped away our education, and have almost extinguished our flame. We are hit. We are bleeding. But we ain't got time to bleed. We will bring the giants to their knees, and you will witness our revolution. Sincerely, the serfs. Well, I wonder if this is at his website. Shredded our unions. I seem to remember that Jesse Ventura, when he was governor of Wisconsin? Was he governor? Was it Minnesota? Hey, sorry. Which one was it? I guess it was. Yeah, it was Minnesota. Which one was it for Dan? Minnesota. Okay, Minnesota. I seem to remember that he was not a great big union fan, but I don't know. Maybe he was. I don't know. But this is something I wish I would have written. You know what I'm saying? I'll do this again a little bit later on in the program because I think it bears repeating. But it's because of that, you know. I will concede, maybe, possibly, along with the weakness I just admitted, I'll also concede a false sense that maybe it's false. I don't know that Barack Obama. See, he's in that top 1%, but that Barack Obama really, that his heart's in the right place, that he really does believe the things he says. There's just no way that he can implement any policy that he would like to put out there for the working class in this country. I don't know. Maybe that's just wishful thinking on my part. We'll be right back. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
Malloy.
25 before the hour. This hour is sponsored by James Higgins, who includes a poignant message. He writes, in memory of my mother Dorothy, who died 6 years ago today from complications of Alzheimer's disease. I miss you, Mom. Thanks for the sponsorship, James. Let me do that Jesse Ventura thing one more time because it should be anyway threatening to the people who are destroying the country. We know who they are. We definitely know who they are. It's under the heading, We Ain't Got Time to Bleed. You control our world. You've poisoned the air we breathe, contaminated the water we drink, and copyrighted the food we eat. We fight in your wars, die for your causes, and sacrifice our freedoms to protect you. You've liquidated our savings, destroyed our middle class, and used our tax dollars to bail out your unending greed. We are slaves to your corporations, zombies to your airwaves, servants to your decadence. You've stolen our elections, assassinated our leaders, and abolished our basic rights as human beings. You own our property, shipped away our jobs, and shredded our unions. You've profited off of disaster, destabilized our currencies, and raised our cost of living. You've monopolized our freedom, stripped away our education, and have almost extinguished our flame. We are hit, we are bleeding, but we ain't got time to bleed. We will bring the giants to their knees, and you will witness our revolution. Signed, sincerely, The Serfs. Andy writes, Mike, here's a quote from Obama's speech. Quote, I understand these fears, Obama said. I say that if we truly believe in a progressive vision of our society, we have the obligation to prove that we can afford our commitments. If we believe that government can make a difference in people's lives, we have the obligation to prove that it works by making government smarter, leaner, and more effective, end quote. Andy writes, he should have just said he wants to make government small enough to drown in the bathtub. I guess I need to start working up some recipes for cat food and whatever weeds I can find outside. I hear that the ash in the cat food will keep my coat soft and silky. Oh, and it helps control hairballs. Andy. Andy. What is interesting to me is the extreme in difference in opinions regarding Obama's speech today, at least in people who have emailed me. And if you watch, the Geek Squad on television, you have the hardcore right wingers, the whores and punks and bums and rats that make up and the cockroaches that make up the Republican Party in Congress. And then you have kind of the cowardly or dreamy or out of touch with reality Democrats on the other side who are terrified of their own shadows. Who praise what he said today as being the best speech he could make and really pushing the Republicans' face in the mud. The thing that is not understood about that, of course, is pushing Republicans' face in the mud is like throwing Br'er Rabbit in the briar patch. So, aside from all the punditry, just the emails I've gotten today that were, or Prairie Two's piece. Extremely, what did he say at the very end? He feels optimistic. Yeah, I felt that optimism in listening to Obama before, and then got that horrible emotional crash when it turned out to be just words. You know, when you listen to somebody and you realize that your society, your culture is right on the brink of collapse. It's right on the edge of being utterly destroyed, not from an invading force, but from a bunch of rat bastards like these Republicans and the greedy puppet masters who control them. And you hear somebody stand up like Obama did and said, no, you know, I'm not going to let this happen. I'm going to restore civil liberties. I'm going to restore the rule of law. I'm going to end this predatory process of financial jiggering of anything that moves and most things that don't move. I'm going to put a stop to the madness. And you think, oh, thank God, just in the nick of time. It's like one of those old four-reeler or 10-reeler or 20-reeler serials where, you know, little Eva is constantly being tied to the railroad tracks and Snidely Whiplash curls his mustache, and all of a sudden, here comes the guy in the white hat! Woohoo! No, you don't remember those? Okay. I guess you have to be old to remember those. But, you know, Obama has identified himself as the guy in the white hat over and over and over again. And poor little Eva has been run over so many goddamn times, she's a chunk of hamburger tied to the train tracks. How many times are we going to run this movie? Oops, little Eva got it again. Oops, there it is again. Oops, oh no, not again. Man. So yeah, great speech. Now what? Russ Baker, whowhatwhy.com. We had him on the program. It's a great website. You ought to check it out. He has some stats here. A new report from the Institute for Policy Studies program on inequality and the common good. You probably heard of some of these stats and some of these ideas, but anyway, here's the executive summary. Russ Baker, you can get this at whowhatwhy.com. It's who, what, why, not who, what, for. whowhatwhy.com. The United States is a wealthy society, but our wealth is pooled at the top. Here are the bullet points. We face mammoth state and federal budget cuts because we have, in large part, failed to sufficiently tax America's millionaires and prevent aggressive tax avoidance by multinational companies. You know, that first point, that's the problem. Why doesn't anybody understand this? These sons of bitches at the top who have sucked everything into their offshore accounts refuse to pay taxes. That's where the problem is. It isn't unionized school teachers, goddammit, any more than it's unionized cops or firefighters or... Oh, I'm screaming again. Oh, no. Bullet point two. Wealth and income have concentrated in the United States at incredibly rapid levels. The richest 1% of households own over 35.6% of all private wealth, approximately $20 trillion. The number of households with incomes exceeding 1 million has grown from 15,000 in 1961 to 361,000 today, adjusted for inflation. This is a 968% increase, while the U.S. population only grew 69% over the same 50-year period. Bullet point three, as wealth and income have become increasingly concentrated in the hands of a few, middle-class living standards have imploded, due both to wage stagnation and the deterioration of public services and investment. Poverty has remained persistent and even worsened. As a result of the economic meltdown, the number of Americans living in poverty has spiked to the highest level in 15 years. Bullet point four, or no, still bullet point three. Our tax system now raises proportionately less from affluent taxpayers and large corporations than it did 50 years ago. In 1961, the year Barack Obama was born. Bullet point four. Households with incomes over $1 million in 1961 paid an average 43% of their income in federal income taxes. Today, households with $1 million income or more pay 23%, about half as much, adjusting for inflation. Next bullet point. If households with income over $1 million today paid their federal income taxes at the same rate that comparable households paid taxes in 1961, we would this year raise an additional $231 billion. We'll be right back.
Gonna be a delicacy. So lift your chops and eat it.
Truth seekers, gather round the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
It's 10 before the hour. And once again, this hour is sponsored by James Higgins. Thank you very much, James. The message that comes with the sponsorship is poignant and touching in memory of my mother, Dorothy, who died 6 years ago today from complications of Alzheimer's disease. I miss you, Mom. Thank you, James, and our thoughts certainly. And I mean it sincerely, Kathy and I, when we read the message with your sponsorship. Thoughts to you. All right, Prairie 2 is weighing in again here after listening to some of the emails and I guess even in my comments. He writes, liberals don't seem to grasp that Obama can't make Congress do anything. He can shame them publicly, and he did today. If you want to see a progressive agenda, you need to elect progressives. If the teabaggers could send entrenched Republicans packing, then we can do the same with blue dog Democrats. Wisconsin demonstrates that principle. Obama set a real progressive tone today, so for so-called liberals to say he's just lying is the height of stupidity, or at least raging ignorance. If the people won't take what Obama said today and go out and make it happen, then it doesn't matter what he said. Stop waiting for Obama to fix everything and organize. There you go, prairienumeral2.com. I'm sure that people who listen to this program get that. As a matter of fact, we've talked about that. But I think it's important to also note that a lot of people, mistakenly so, thought Obama was that progressive. No, he can't. He can only use the so-called bully pulpit. But to completely back down, Bruce, as he has time and time again, a lot of the things that Obama said he would do not require acts of Congress. One of the more obvious parts of that is his claimed support of striking employees. That he would don comfortable shoes and join them on the picket line. Was that just rhetorical flourishes by somebody who wanted to be president? If so, then it's his bad, not ours, for expecting him to do what he said. I mean, that's, and the list goes on and on. Obama does have a veto pen. And if the right-wing Congress passes bills, laws that are contrary to the progressive agenda, it's incumbent upon Obama to veto them. If Obama says he wants to improve the health insurance fiasco in this country, and then denies even discussion about single payer, What's a poor dumbass progressive like me supposed to do? What am I supposed to do? Am I supposed to think, okay, well, I'll just get to work over the next 8 years, 10 years, 15 years, and see if I can elect some progressives who will do what I want, what I want done. I understand what you're saying, Bruce. I really do. Stop bitching. Get off the couch. Go do something. I understand. I get that. And to the extent that I can, I do. And I think a lot of people who listen to this program do. But if the president of the United States only uses his power to make speeches that hook into the progressive consciousness or even liberal consciousness or even democratic consciousness and then refuses to follow through, then what? What? I've said before, and I'll say it again, you're damn right. Let a progressive emerge, a real progressive, a real Democrat from the left. I don't know that there are any, but let one emerge. And I think most progressives will support that person, even though it would guarantee a Republican in the White House. You know, we've gone down this path so many times. You know, support Kerry, but Kerry's not progressive. Yeah, but, you know, if you don't, Bush will get in. Support, pick whoever you want. Support this candidate, because if you don't, the Republicans will get in. Well, the Republicans have been in, and the Republicans don't need to be the dominant party. They've shown that over and over again. All they have to do is act like petulant four-year-olds, which they are very adroit at doing, and just sit back on their asses and say, no, 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 no. And there's not a Senate Democratic leader who has the courage to say, all right, that's enough of this crap. The rules can be written, rewritten, with every session, every new session of the Congress. Those rules demanding 60% for cloture, those are rules written by the Senate, and they can be unwritten. But nobody does it. So, to say that, people should just if people won't take what Obama said today and go out and make it happen, then it doesn't matter what he said. Stop waiting for Obama to fix everything and organize. Bruce, truly, I'm not waiting for Obama to fix anything. I'm waiting for him to fulfill his promises. That's all. And I realize that's kind of quaint to expect a politician to fulfill some of the promises, including the ones that have to do with essential constitutional rights that were destroyed during Bush-Cheney. And if I hear a man running for president or a woman running for president saying she's going to restore those rights, and I vote for that person, and then that person more or less gives me the middle finger once he or she is in office, what am I supposed to do? We'll be back after the break.
Protection.
Russ Baker at whowhatwhy.com as put together from the Institute for Policy Studies program on inequality, on inequality and the common good. You heard some of them. Here's another one. If affluent households, those with incomes in 2011 between 200,000 and a million, paid at 1961 rates, the U.S. Treasury would see another $151 billion. If U.S. corporations, here's another bullet point, if they paid at the same effective tax rate they paid in 1961, the additional tax revenue would total almost $500 billion. Next bullet point, in 1961, small business owners and individuals paid twice as much in federal income taxes as large corporations. By 2011, small business owners and individuals would be paying nearly five times in taxes what corporations pay. These five tax revenue reforms mentioned above could raise a total of as much as $4 trillion over the next decade. No, these five establish several higher income tax brackets for millionaires. That would generate $60 to $80 billion a year. Scrap overseas corporate tax havens. There's another $100 billion a year. Introduce a modest financial transaction tax. That would be on stock sales and so on and so forth. That would raise $150 billion a year. Revamp the estate tax to include progressive rates. Another $25 billion a year. End preferential treatment for income from dividends and capital gains. Another $88 billion. The authors of the report know what sort of response to expect, and they anticipate it. They say, quote, critics of the proposals we present here would, if these ideas gain political momentum, no doubt howl class warfare and dub these initiatives job killers. Some would argue that government shouldn't be in the business of picking winners in the economy. But our tax policy, our current tax policy, is already picking winners every day. Our government is subsidizing practices that are burning up the earth with climate change and freezing out the regionalized green businesses of the future. We're rigging the tax rules to benefit the wealthy and global corporations at the expense of everyone else. And the report concludes, quote, until we as a nation reverse the great tax shift, we will be debating and likely imposing totally unnecessary and avoidable austerity measures at every level of government. We will keep on firing teachers and police officers and mental health workers instead of ending the games that corporate tax dodgers play and insisting that all Americans, including the most affluent, contribute to our national well-being. The Center on Budget and Policy Priorities already reports that more than 46 states have imposed severe budget cuts that hurt vulnerable residents and endanger economic recovery. Now we face almost unimaginably deep cuts at the federal level as well. As a nation, we can and we must do better. End of the report that Russ Baker is synopsizing here at whowhatwhy.com. And then he writes, whatever you make of this proposal, like it, hate it, or somewhere in between, it's something worth discussing. If you are one of the lucky ones who have been blessed, fairly or not, with the benefits this country, its people, and its economy can bestow, you might well ask, what have I done in return? And whether or not I like these measures, and who does like paying more for anything that they have than they have to, why don't I step up and do the right thing? After all, I can afford to. Many Americans beat their breasts and argue that they contribute enough through getting up in the morning and doing what they do. Taxes are bad, period, they say. It's all a waste and a ripoff and lazy people taking my hard-earned money. Government is sinister and oppressive. That's really a uniquely American perspective and doesn't in any way reflect the reality of the need to pay for things we all use, things that in many ways benefit the wealthy far more than they'd like to admit. Still, the resistance to taxes has a hugely powerful place in the national psyche, and the emotional tug is profound. So no, you don't need to concede anything at all if you don't want to. but you could. Russ Baker writing at whowhatwhy.com. You ought to check out that website. I'm serious. You really ought to check out whowhatwhy.com. A lot of good stuff there. Oh, and I've got a couple of emails here. People want to know this music. If you're listening online, if you're listening to the stream or you're listening on Ustream, the music that we're playing during the breaks while the radio stations and XM and Sirius do the commercials, the music we're playing is sent to me by a young singer-songwriter, Eric Johansson. He has a website, Empty Self, Empty, you know, E-M-P-T-Y, EmptySelf.com. If you want to go there and check it out, I like this. EmptySelf.com. The musician's name is Eric Johansson. It's his music, and check it out. We put a link up, didn't we? Not yet. We'll have a link at my website, MikeMalloy.com. EmptySelf.com. We're going to take some calls if you want to join in. I don't have anything else to say about Obama's speech. All I'll say is I thought, I don't disagree with the idea that it was a wonderful speech. And as somebody said, was it Prairie 2 who said the most important speech made from a progressive point of view since Eisenhower's Cross of Iron speech? That was the one where he said every tank, the money spent on tanks and bombs and bullets, deny children education, deny people jobs, ultimately, the Cross of Iron speech. And I agree, what Obama said today was powerful. I'm not discounting the speech at all. Not at all. I would just like to see some follow through, I would like to see the President of the United States use the power that comes with being the President of the United States, if not fulfill promises, because I don't think he made any specific promises in the speech today. This was a declarative speech. This was not a speech. Excuse me. This is not a speech where he laid out policy. Everybody's saying it's a political speech. Well, not everybody. These dumbass Republicans are saying it's a political speech. Anything they don't like or don't understand, they label as a political speech. So you expect that kind of reaction from dumbass Republicans, especially this Eric Cantor freak and this John Boehner. Where did these two, this gruesome twosome, where the hell did they come from? My God. And Mitch McConnell, little prune face, little bastard. So anything that they're saying is expected. Labeling the speech political, or it starts the 2012 presidential, who cares? I thought the speech was a good one, just like damn near everything this president has said. Gets me completely. That's one of the reasons I chose not to listen to it today. But having read excerpts and heard excerpts, it was very good. Now, is there going to be follow-through? Phone number here is 877-996-2556 if you want to jump in here and join us. 21 past the hour. Just one thing here before we go to your calls. There was an article at, I think both Huffington Post and Daily Beast. A study on torture was conducted by the American Red Cross. And the report said, quote, Americans' opinions on torture seem to have fractured, largely on generational lines. So who are the biggest supporters of torture in this country right now? According to the American Red Cross report, a surprising majority, almost 60% of American teenagers, thought things like waterboarding or sleep deprivation are sometimes acceptable. According to the study, overall teens are significantly more in favor of torture than older adults. And part of it is because media have taught these kids that it was morally acceptable to torture people. And the infamous, was it on Fox, the program 24. The breakdown here, I'm not going to bore you with the numbers, the percentages, but the way newspapers reported on controlled drowning, you know, using a term like waterboarding, when in fact it's controlled drowning, you are drowning somebody. You are actually ending their life. You're ending their life. It's just at the last moment you choose not to. The victim has nothing to say about it. It's not waterboarding. That sounds like something you do at the beach. It is drowning. You are murdering somebody. And if media would have been honest about that when it became clear that the United States official government policy now is torture and that controlled drowning is perhaps the most favorite right now form of torture. The second most favorite is sensory deprivation, which is what Bradley Manning is going through. Sleep deprivation, sensory deprivation, or sensory overload. Either one will drive the average person insane. But, you know, it's pretty frightening. It's the price you pay when you elevate torture and torturers to merely one side of a political argument, right? We don't torture. Well, it's not really torture. It's waterboarding. What a Rush Limbaugh, that just son of a bitch, filthy pig of a human being. Remember back when he said, when the pictures came out from Abu Ghraib of the torture conducted there? Just like, you know, like a college, like a fraternity hazing. That's all that is. So now we have a generation that approaching 60%, according to the study, by the Red Cross, not by, you know, somebody with an agenda. I don't know. Does the Red Cross have an agenda? According to the Red Cross, nearly 60% of American young people say torture is acceptable. Wow. Sanchez is in East L.A. Hello, Sanchez.
Hey, very good evening to you, Senor Malloy.
How are you doing?
I'm okay. I'm hoping you're going to be hearing me okay. I'm calling you via Skype tonight. I'm actually at work right now. I wanted to take a quick break to chime in here. You hear me okay, right?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, cool. Cool. Geez, you know, I'm going to tell you the same thing that I told your buddy Fred, Ben Friedman, last week, was that this speech tonight, it was nothing but that, a pretty speech. Last week, Obama announced that he was opening his reelection campaign, and this was just his first speech in public. And it was a very nice speech. He said some admirable things, sure, but come on, let's get real here. I mean, especially I'm talking to you O-bots out there in the audience listening. How the hell is he even going to get one of those initiatives through Congress when you have both McChinless and the Orange, the drunken Orange, sobbing one in control of things? There's no way that he's going to get anything. So this is just another empty speech on top of empty speeches. We as progressives, we are so damn tired of being talked and sweet talked to. You know, Obama keeps telling us, oh, you got to hold my feet to the fire. Keep holding my feet to the fire. Mm-hmm. You know, Mike, Obama's feet look like barbecue right now. you know, which explains why you were just asking, well, how come he didn't put on a pair of comfortable shoes and go support and walk with the workers in Wisconsin a couple of months ago? That's exactly why. If you study his walk, when you see him walking to the podium, you can see him wincing. That's how badly, that's how long we as progressives have been holding his speech to the fire. So I'm sorry, it was just an empty speech, nothing new, move along, and there's not going to be anything, because you know what? This is going to be another issue if he even decides to push any of these initiatives through. It's going to be just like the healthcare debate. We will go through about a year and a half of trying to do this, and in the end, he's going to concede, just like he has on every other single detail. So I'm not impressed. I really am not. And it was just an empty effort to try and get progressives, like you were saying yesterday, mm-hmm. and you were saying the day before, all of these disillusioned progressives that are ready to throw in the towel with him.
Hold on a second, Sanchez. Let me do a break, and we'll come back, and I'll give you some more time here. Hold on. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malone.
Right inside the night, I'm waiting for the light. Seems like I'm in the middle. Working for something that I can't touch and sometimes can't even believe.
America, one flying monkey at a time. It's More Mike Malloy.
So many flying monkeys, so little time. 25 before the hour, we're talking with Sanchez from East LA. All right.
Oh, God, so many flying monkeys, and then all those banana peels that we keep having to avoid. Otherwise, we keep slipping around, you know?
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah. Well, that's the problem. You see, they keep flinging these banana peels and keep tripping up the people. And what I'm trying to say here is that the entire system, lock, stock, and barrel, has been bought and paid for already. Obama, he has to raise $1 billion in order to compete, and that doesn't even guarantee that the corporatocracy is going to let him win again this time around. They may give it to Donald Trump, or they may give it to whoever decides to, you know, get to the top of the heap as far as the Republicans are concerned. And again, I acknowledge the only thing the Republicans want to do is destroy the country, destroy Obama, and hand over the reins of every single piece of American treasury to the corporatocracy. That's a given. We know that. But Obama, as the coach of the Washington Generals playing against the Harlem Globetrotters, who are the Republicans, and again, they own both teams. The corporatocracy owns both the Globetrotters and the Washington Generals. But as the coach of the Washington Generals, who are the Democratic Party, why must he always give 50 points right off the top before even negotiating with the Harlem Globetrotters?
Right.
You know, doesn't he realize already that they're going to out-rebound him, out-jump him, and out-clown him?
Well.
And that he has to give them? So this is the reason why we as progressives, we are sick and tired of it. And I don't blame the Move On or any of the people that we're talking about. We're sick of this. And I hope and I'm expecting them to hold their guns to this the same way I did. I mean, 2 weeks after Obama got into office, you might remember this, Mike, he started holding secret Oval Office meetings and refusing to divulge who the members of those meetings were, just like Dick Cheney. And they turned out to be coal company executives. And then the lies come out. Oh, let's support coal. There's clean coal. There is no such thing.
No, so there isn't.
Yeah. So, you know, come on, you old boss out there. Wake up and see this as like you're being played once again.
Refuse
to be played.
All right, Sanchez, let me move on. Well said. Thank you, sir. I appreciate
Love
your
to you
comment.
And Kathy.
All right. Take care, Sanchez. Take care. It is very easy I'm living, breathing proof of that, to be sucked in by good rhetoric. I mean, who doesn't like, especially in these times, who doesn't like the good rhetoric. The rhetoric that says, you know, A is true and B is true and C is true and it's all bad and it's all because of the Republicans, and which I don't disagree with. You know, the last decent Republican president we had, Bill Clinton, his policies, his tax increases in 1993 set the country on a fiscal slope that would have had us in black ink right now instead of this enormous mountain of red. Of course, Clinton then immediately took aim and shot himself in his own groin and the nation by signing off on the end of Glass-Steagall. So no matter what kinds of tax reforms flood of money into the Treasury because of his tax policies that Clinton generated, and he did, the result of his signing the death of Glass-Steagall that was put into effect in the 1930s, in order to stop the financial predators in this country from doing it to us again, with the insistence of Phil Graham, this roach-filled bastard who used to, this former senator from, where is he from, Texas? Who went on to work for UBS over in Switzerland, helping wealthy Americans hide their money? That Phil Graham, that you never hear about anymore, right? He wants to lay as low as he can for fear he'll be indicted. Don't worry about it, Phil. They'll never come after you. You made them all wealthy. But that was where Clinton had great tax policy, and then he turns around and blows up the country with NAFTA, signing off on NAFTA, and then much worse, ending Glass-Steagall, where the law that prohibited banks from getting into the investment business and making money from debt and so on and so forth. You know what I'm talking about, without my going into some economic explanation, which is way over my head. I don't want to drown here. We only have about 20 minutes left in the program. Right? I forget what started that tirade. Never mind. Ellen is in Nashville, Tennessee. Hello, Ellen.
Well, hi, Mike. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I've been listening to you since IE America.
Oh, my God.
And I love your show. My husband turned me on to your show.
Oh.
And ditto to Sanchez, I agree with his remarks. I'll make mine quick if you don't have much time. But I wondered if you and Kathy heard that they've discontinued the Social Security benefit yearly statements as affected April 1st. It's true. My husband heard it. I never heard it.
Now say wait a minute. Say it again. What is it?
The you know, the annual statements that I guess most of us receive from Social Security Administration that tell you where you are on your benefit, what your, you know, it's a yearly statement. We get them anyway. That tells us what our benefit will be when we retire.
Right, I got you.
I'm not looking to see its official name, but whatever that statement is called.
Right, I got you.
And I haven't heard anyone mention it. My husband thought he heard it on Sirius, so I called Social Security and later followed it up. And so they say, Mike, they're doing it for a savings. And here's my quick theory, and I'll save it, and I'll hang up and let someone else. You know, if they go with Simpson Bowles, like he's really... My understanding is he's endorsing Simpson Bowles for Social Security. He just doesn't say it really explicitly.
Mm-hmm.
But if he does, those cuts, if you read that carefully, a moment of truth, they add to about 35%. Average people are going to see a third of their benefit, not a tweak, a huge, at least for most people it will be, that needed it all, of their benefit drop. So I don't buy in to worry about the cost. I believe that it's a smart move, though, because I think you'll sign something by July, August of this year. That's just my guess, of course, but from everything I read.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's being clever, don't you? I think he's just making sure they've been discontinued, and he wants this not to be coming in to millions of households, because what will they do? What I would do is I'll look at last year's, you know, and sort of take it out and glance at it a moment and look at the new one. And that's, I would believe, is to keep everybody from seeing that huge drop. Because once it's signed into law,
right,
some of that will show. I mean, I don't know exactly how quick it all will, but potentially it could be, you know, shown in a big contrast is what I'm saying may appear. So, what would you think on that? That's the only guess I've got as to why they've actually discontinued it.
Well, I don't know. You're saying that they have ended those statements, letters,
mm-hmm.
or they will end?
Well, a handful, I believe, might go out to 1 July. I believe the government works, I believe that's their fiscal year beginning. But what they're saying is it's not permanent. They're telling us that you can go do the estimator online. This is a press release. All anybody has to do is Google mm-hmm. a press release about it. And anyway, but they'll pick it up later. But when they do, get this, Mike, when they do, it's going to be only for people age 60 and older. They won't pick like up when they started this in the early 90s to include everyone. There's simply going to be people that are 60 and older that will get them when they do pick it back up and they can have more money to send them out. Now, that's what they're telling. You know, it's interesting to read. You might want to glance at it or some of your listeners and see what you make of it. I thought it was, and I don't buy the reason they give. Maybe I'm a little suspicious. But at any rate, thank you so much for your time, and I love your show.
All right. Thanks, Ellen. I appreciate what you had to say. I hadn't heard about that, but that is, it's very easy to get all conspiratorial about something like that. On the other hand, it's very easy to, as Ellen says, just wonder, okay, why? I know the statement she's talking about now. Maybe you've gotten those where, after you're 40 or something, you start getting these. I started getting them years ago. Estimates of what your Social Security monthly check is going to be if you take early retirement at 62 or wait till 65 or whatever your age cohort would be considered full unemployment, a full retirement. Or if you wait beyond that to say age 70 or what have you. And I've been looking at those things for years, And now they're going to stop. So on the one hand, yeah, it could be some sinister reason. Maybe they're trying to tell people something. Maybe they just don't want the political political kick out there when people start to get those things. People in their 40s and 50s. I'm not talking about people in their 20s, and I'm also not talking about people in their 80s. I'm talking about people in that vast middle group, 40, 50, 55. If all of a sudden they stop coming, I mean, I guess you can still find them online, like Ellen said. I don't know. I don't know anything. Nothing. If you come to this program looking for answers, it's a waste of time, dudes and dudettes. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Make speeches to the wind. Count the votes that might have been. What you gonna do when the silence falls? See that cloud in the eastern sky. See that cloud in the eastern sky. Brighter than the brightest pearl. Big enough to eat this world. What you gonna do when the well runs dry?
Ten before the hour. Okay, to Ellen, who called in. I've gotten 3 or 4 emails here from people that clearly state that all this information is still available online. What they're trying to do is just cut down on. They're trying to save money and steer more people to the agency's website. So you can still get this stuff. As a matter of fact, there was an article, I don't know where this is from. So this, it's all still available, Ellen. It looks like it's just being done to cut back on. And, you know, that makes sense. I guess. Jeremy is in Burlington, Vermont. Hello, Jeremy.
Hey, Mike.
Hey.
Hey, I wasn't impressed with Obama's speech today. I think it's just more of the same. And I was telling Kathy that I really think he should say that he's in over his head and should have given a speech more like Jesse Ventura wrote and said, I'm done, but in the next 2 years I'm hunting you guys.
Yeah, well, you know, that was an idea I had after the midterm elections, when all of a sudden America decided to go completely insane and send a bunch of halfwits owned by corporate America to make their laws for corporate America and leave Americans standing out in the dirt. My idea was for Obama to say, okay, you've spoken. You don't like my policies, so let me just tell you, I'm not going to run for re-election, but for the next 2 years, I'm going to kick more ass than you could possibly imagine, and then really push this weak-kneed Democratic Party in the House and the Senate to act like legislators and quit acting like you know, little whiny ass children who are being, you know, bullied around by older children. That would be the Republicans. But he didn't do that, you know. And my point was, Obama, you know, Obama has made history. He's in the history books now. If there is a United States, you know, 500 years from now, they will talk about the first African American president, Barack Obama. So now that he's made history and he's shown in the first couple of years here that he's a totally ineffective leader where it concerns policy, and maybe that's because of what you point out, or maybe it's because of fear, or maybe it's just he is in over his head. So what he ought to do, perhaps, or what he should have done, is just say, okay, you don't want me? That's cool. You don't want my party? That's cool. But for the next 2 years, hold on to your ass, because it's going to be a rough ride.
I also think that he's doing it in part because he knows election season's back and he's trying to fire up his party because they are doing the same thing. But that's all he's trying to do.
He's trying to fire up the Democratic Party?
Yeah, he's trying to fire up his base because he knows they're doing it too, thinking election's coming back up in another year and a half.
Oh, you mean the progressives and the...
Yeah, the progressives and anyone that would have supported him in the first place.
Yeah. Well, you know, a couple of speeches is not going to do that. I don't think.
Exactly.
I think if he were willing to really get in the trenches and really start pushing for a progressive agenda, then he might regain the support. But I have a horrible feeling, and I may be part of the reason it happens, because I've made a decision. Unless I see something really positive in the next year and a half, I will not vote for this man. But I think we're in for the worst possible thing that could happen, and that would be a Republican step into the executive branch of government. So,
such as Donald Trump.
Yeah. What a goddamn clown. I mean,
I
what a complete...
Bankrupt his own casinos twice.
Right. What a clown. What a jerk. What a complete moron. But, you know, that's where we are today. Hey, Jeremy, thanks,
okay,
man. Appreciate you checking in. Take care. Donald Trump. Prairie 2, sticking to his guns. He writes, Obama got up in public and used his full voice as President of the United States. It's like he stood up and yelled, charge, and we either run up the hill or we sit here and wait for the Republicans to pick us off. It doesn't matter if Obama has any intention of going up the hill with us. If he was really against us, he wouldn't have said what he said today. Okay, I'm not going to argue with my economic affairs correspondent, who provides real good essays for this program. I'm not going to argue with you, Bruce. Really. I've been forwarding to Prairie 2 some of the emails that are coming in here from people who disagree with Prairie 2's point of view. All right. I guess we're about out of time, right? Oh, one more time, because the young man who sent this to me, Eric Johansson, sent in his CD. And that's what we've been playing tonight for people who are listening online, listening to the web stream and listening during the commercial sets. Check out, do we have a link up now? Okay, you can go to MikeMalloy.com if you want to, but it's EmptySelf.com. And check it out. I like this music. I think it's great. We get, you know, we get a lot of music in here. I think John Neems was the first person to ever send us a complete CD. Maybe not. Anyway. All right, stick around. Coming up next hour, church. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. It last night. We somehow had fallen into what had begun to feel like a pattern of doing crazy news from the world of church, Christian church, although sometimes other religions, but mostly Christians. I think Christians are they don't have an exclusive franchise on crazy, but man, close to it. At least in this country, right? So I missed it last night, all hung up talking about other stuff. And even though we had the big news today of Obama's gibberish, I want to digress here and do a little bit of crazy news from the world of American Christianity. Not far from here, there's a town, Dublin, Georgia. It's really in the middle of nowhere. You hear that expression a lot, the middle of nowhere. And a lot of people don't think of Georgia as having vast nowheres. We do. We have enormous nowheres. And Dublin sits halfway between Macon and Savannah. It's along I-16, Interstate 16, that diagonals from Macon all the way down to the coast. And it's pretty deserted out there for miles. I mean, miles and miles and miles. Yes, you know, there are pine forests and pasture lands and a few farms here and there and so on and so forth. But Dublin is kind of it, the town between Macon on a diagonal out to Savannah. I spent a month there one night. It's that bad, and we'll never fully reveal what happened, but Dublin is, suffice it to say, Dublin is kind of a weird Georgia town. It's not a city. I don't know what the population is. 30,000? 40? 25? I don't know. Doesn't matter. Anyway, they have a lot of churches down in Dublin, as you can well imagine. Also, that's below what we call here in Georgia the gnat line. Gnat, as in bugs, those little, we have a name for them here in Georgia. They're called no-see-ums. For the reason that you really don't see them, all of a sudden you feel little, like little needle points on your skin, little needle, like, ow, God. And it's these damn gnats, these no-see-ums. They don't have them so much in North Georgia, where the Molloy compound is located. But below the gnat line, is around Macon. All right, given you all this ridiculous Georgia topographical history, which you have no need for whatsoever, let me get on to what happened or what is going on in Dublin. They have churches all over the place down there. The latest to come out of one of the churches, there's a church there called the Beacon of Light Christian Center. Beacon of Light Christian Center. And coming up soon, they've done this a couple times, but I think this coming Saturday, the members of the Beacon of Light Christian Center in Dublin, Georgia, plan to get together at a local gas station and actively pray for lower gas prices. They're going to ask their Lord and Savior, Jesus Christus, for cheaper gas, which is astonishing to me. If they want to pray to somebody, pray to Allah, since the people who control most of the products that produce gasoline are Muslim. Or better yet, pray to the Saudi royal family, or better yet, to the Bush royal family, because they are business partners with the Saudi. Well, you see how that goes. But anyway, the members of this church, under the careful and pastoral hand of Pastor Marshall Mabry. Marshall Mabry, amen. Marshall Mabry told a local television station, WMAZ. Now, that's in Macon, so it's not really local. I don't know that Dublin has a television station, but he told WMAZ in Macon, "I want to start a movement." Have you thought about Epsom salts? "I want to start a movement." By the way, this is the third time the church members have gathered at the town's one Kroger store gas pumps to pray. This will be the third time. It'll be at the Kroger. Now, the irony here, of course, is that if you have a Kroger grocery card and you spend more than $100, I know because I got one, you spend more than $100 on gas in a given month, they automatically knock a dime a gallon off. So you see the hand of the Lord there, I guess. They automatically knock a dime a gallon off when you swipe your card and then go ahead and buy gas. But Pastor Mabry wants to start a movement. So I'm not sure what the movement is, Reverend. I don't know exactly what you're talking about. You're talking about lower gas prices. Again, you're praying to the wrong deity. You need to try praying to the rich Sunni Muslims in the Middle East, who look at you, of course, as a piece of dreck under their sandals. But that's who you need to pray to if you want lower gas prices, not Jesus Christ. I don't think Jesus Christ is going to pay any attention at all. You know, don't forget it's Passover. Well, coming up pretty soon, and Easter. So I think your prayers are going to be kind of, you know, like, just drift off into the infinite, you think? I don't know. Reverend Mabry told the gas station at the Kroger store. Now, here comes the ironic part. Reverend Mabry told the gas station he would be happy if a higher power would help by knocking down the price by 10 cents a gallon. Apparently, Pastor Mabry doesn't understand that all he needs to do to get it down 10 cents a gallon is to get a Kroger grocery card. That's all you need to do, Rev. I mean, if you do that and then spend an average of $25 a week at the Kroger store, your gas will come down 10 cents a gallon. Amen, amen. Your prayer, hallelujah, is answered. Excuse me. It's that simple. So maybe the Reverend Mabry has, I don't know, the cart before the horse, the answered prayer before the prayer itself. I don't know. But the 10 cents a gallon you're looking for, Rev, is already available to you, and you don't have to drag your people out to a gas pump at the Kroger store and do this nonsense once again. You can already get your 10 cents off a gallon, and I'm surprised nobody at Kroger's hasn't pointed that out to Reverend Marshall Mabry. Now, he says 10 cents a gallon would suffice. If his Lord and Savior will just reduce it by 10 cents a gallon, that'll be sufficient. But he's really hoping for a discount of $1.50 a gallon. I don't know. Tell you what, Jesus, you can go ahead and knock off a dime, but, you know, I'd rather have $1.50. Can you bargain? What kind of preacher wants to bargain with their own deity? Doesn't that invite thunderbolts and the wrath of God? I mean, doesn't it? Bargaining? All right, that's just the first one, and that's out of Dublin, Georgia. Now, that one has a tinge of humor, although it's not very funny humor, is it, when you have a bunch of freaks praying for lower gas prices, asking God of the universe to lower the price at a gas pump over there in Dublin, Georgia, by a dime. Hallelujah, hallelujah, and hallelujah. That story is kind of weird. But coming back from this break, it's no longer funny weird. It's more like criminal weird. Stick around. We'll be right back. Make a good book title. 21 past the hour. We don't have a sponsor this hour, do we? Why not? Why do we have an open hour here? My goodness, come on. Huh? Come on, kids. Oh, that's right. Two open hours. I wasn't paying attention last hour. All right, from Dublin, Georgia, now this one is a little bit harder to deal with. This is from central Wisconsin. There is a town there called Black Earth. Ooh. And in Black Earth, there is a congregation, a church there, the Aletheia Bible Church. In the town of Black Earth, the church was started about 5 years ago with a donation of around $500,000 from two people named Bob and Lori Wick, who live in nearby Mazomany. Are these real places? Black Earth, Mazomany, Wisconsin? Are you kidding me? Mazomany. Where are you from? Mazomany. Oh, really? I'm from Black Earth. Lori Wick who, along with her husband, donated over $500,000, according to the sheriff of the county there, Dane County. They're the ones that started this church. Lori Wick, she's the author of almost three dozen historical Christian novels with more than 5 million books in print. That's according to her Amazon.com profile. And when they were approached by the press the other day by telephone, Bob Wick said they have no comment on the case. Now, the central issue here, the pastor and seven members of this group of freaks has been charged with using wooden rods to beat infants as young as 2 months old. 2 months old, beating infants for, quote, being emotional, grumpy, or crying. Now, think about this. Do you have kids? Do you have nieces and nephews? Think about it. 2 months old. These crazy sons of bitches. Spare the rod and spoil the child. My goddamn, we got to do what the Lord says. Beating 2 month-old infants with wooden rods. The investigation into the Aletheia Bible Church began last November when former members got in touch with authorities with their concerns about how children are being treated. And six church members pled innocent to charges of child abuse after appearing last Thursday in Dane County Circuit Court. Pastor Philip Carminiti and his brother John Carminiti were charged with a dozen counts of child abuse. They pleaded innocent. The victims included 12 children ranging in age from infancy, 2 months old, to 6 years. The sheriff's office said, quote, during interviews with detectives, the pastor expressed his belief that the Bible dictates the use of a rod over a hand. Beat him with a rod. No, don't spank him with your hand. To punish children. The pastor stated that children only a few months old are worthy of the rod. And that by 1.5 months of age, a child is old enough to be spanked. Throughout the investigation, the church members were open with detectives about their spare the rod, spoil the child philosophy. They described using wooden dowels, wooden spoons, on the bare skin of children, the sheriff's office said. According to the sheriff's office, the Reverend Philip Carminiti said, if you spike early and it is done right, then kids will be happy and obedient. According to the sheriff's office, the dolls were described as being 12 to 18 inches long with a diameter about the size of a quarter. Go ahead, put your thumb and your forefinger up and make a circle. Do it right now, about the size of a quarter. Take a look at that. That's the thickness of the rod that these Christian crazy sons of bitches were beating two-month-old children. One person described the children being emotional, grumpy, or crying. That behavior would constitute a beating with a dowel.
Gaze at your daughter as he gazes.
yourself with the truth. It's more Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. I don't know why I'm doing religious stories tonight. They just intrigued the hell out of me, so to speak. The first one about Dublin, Georgia, where the pastor down there at a church is going to pray for gas prices to get lower by a dime. He's praying at a Kroger store where all you have to do is buy $100 worth of groceries every month and you get a dime off. Never mind. But this one in Wisconsin, in the small town of Black Earth, which is not far from Mazomanie, Wisconsin, Black Earth, Wisconsin. Small church started by $500,000 from a couple named Bob and Lori Wick. She is the author of all sorts of historical Christian novels, millions of books in print. And so they gave this money to this group, and apparently one of the primary tenets of their religious psychosis is beating children as young as 18 months, 24 months, with wooden dolls whose circumference is that of a quarter. And again, make a circle with your thumb and forefinger and make it about the size of a quarter, and then think about a stick 12 to 18 inches long of that diameter and beating a child with it, a baby, because the baby has the audacity to cry out in church. You see, the children often were punished when they cried or failed to sit still during church services. That's what former church members said. The complaint that the sheriff has in Dane County, Wisconsin, says Phil, that's the minister, was very strict about children being quiet during church. He's also a goddamn psychopath. Just a complete freak. This is somebody who ought to be taken out to the town square and hanged by his thumbs and just let him hang there for a while until enough flies crawl in and out of his mouth and eye sockets, and he realizes that, and he can scream out the name of his Lord to relieve him and let him realize what Jesus said about children, about such as the kingdom. Oh, never mind. These people don't have any concept of their own avatar. But the reverend's brother told investigators that he doesn't allow his family to communicate with people outside his religious beliefs and has punished his wife and his son by confining them to their rooms until they corrected their disobedience. Doo-doo confines his wife to her room. Sounds like a loving Christian family, doesn't it, huh? And let me tell you something. The reason I bring these stories up, because if these people had their way, these various religious sociopaths, this would be imposed on everybody in this country. Do you realize, Truth Seeker, how many members of the Republican Party see absolutely nothing wrong with, nay, see this as proper behavior? Do you think defunding Planned Parenthood has anything to do with abortion? It has nothing to do with abortion. It has everything to do with sending your wife to her room because she has disobeyed you. Do you know how many Republican members of the United States Congress subscribe to this horse crap, this religious debauchery? Do you? What is this group that the book was written about, the family, this group of psychopathic evangelical freaks that has existed in the guts of Washington, D.C. for the past, what, 40 years, dictating religious psycho nonsense, not just to American, quote, leaders, end quote, this National Day of Prayer garbage that has as its genesis this kind of crap? Not just American lawmakers are sucked into this, but so are global lawmakers, especially from Africa. There seems to be some incredible collusion between white American evangelicals and black African evangelicals, that they are all hell-bent on this vicious, destructive, mindless, psycho behavior. This dictator in the Ivory Coast, who was recently defeated in an election and refused to leave office. He's now been placed under arrest. He was supported by Pat Robertson and Glenn Beck and the rest of these religious maniacs. Yeah, supported, you know. But I digress. I digress. An attorney who represents the wife of the pastor. I guess it's the wife. Same last name. Maybe it's a sister. Maybe they're both. But anyway, an attorney who represents the wife described her, the one who is confined in her room until she corrects her disobedience, she's described as a, quote, caring mother who loves her children. Even though she willingly and readily, apparently, what does this remind you of? Of course. What book? Huh? What couple of books? Of course it does. Absolutely. She participates in the beating of her own babies. Not to be concerned, it says so in that book of murder, rape, incense, suicide, mass murder, delusion, corruption, filth, debauchery, you know, the Bible, that's what you're supposed to do. All the children of the parents charged in these crimes against innocence are remaining in their homes while this is worked out. And the families are working with social workers from Dane County Human Services. Human Services? Human? Why not have somebody from animal rescue work with these psycho parents? You think? 2-month-old children beaten because they cry. Son of a bitch. Okay, that's number two. Number three, this is from Virginia, from the Roanoke, Virginia Times. The Attorney General, Ken Cuccinelli, says guns should be allowed in churches if the churches approve. Guns should be allowed in churches in Virginia. Of course they should. The Attorney General there, Ken Cuccinelli, says guns, said the opinion balances gun rights with private property rights. gun rights. Virginians can carry firearms into churches and other places of worship while services are being conducted. But churches also have the right to ban guns from their premises, according to advisory opinion from Ken Cuccinelli, the Attorney General of that United State. Cuccinelli issued the opinion late last week in response to a state legislator's inquiry about a Virginia law that prohibits individuals from carrying firearms into religious services without, quote, good and sufficient reason. Good? What would that be?
Well, there's a sinner in there. God damn it, there's a liberal. I'm going in there and shoot the bastard. He's in God's house. You know, I used to beat my children with a rod the circumference of a quarter. Now I'm going to get in there and kill me a demon, a liberal.
Cuccinelli, the Attorney General of Virginia, wrote in his April 8th opinion about all this, quote, "It is my opinion that carrying a weapon for personal protection constitutes a good and sufficient reason under the statute to carry a weapon into a place of worship while a meeting for religious purposes is being held there." Protection? Personal protection? You go into church? You go into a church? Is this a degenerate culture or what? The Attorney General of Virginia says, well, yeah, you know, you may run into somebody inside the church whose husband you've been having sex with, right? Or wife, and he or she may want to drill your ass, so you better have your gun, you know? As a matter of fact, you know what would be really cool? You can probably buy it on the internet. Looks like a Bible. Looks like one of those leather-bound Bibles. But when you open it up, it holds a gun. It's all the pages have been cut out. And you open it up. What? What? I'm in here to pray. You're what? You caught me with your wife. What? Put that gun down. Well, here's my gun. Bang, 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 bang. And we'll now have communion. Oh! Cuccinelli added, it is my further opinion that places of worship can restrict or ban firearms from their premises. You know, if they want to get all commie on us and, you know. A little bit more on this one. Oh, stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. The hour. So we're almost finished. Wednesday night church services here. The Attorney General of Virginia is trying his damnedest, Mr. Cuccinelli, to balance gun rights with private property rights where it concerns churches. And he says that you know, if a person has a good and sufficient reason, you know, personal protection to want to carry a gun into Sunday morning church service, then he should be allowed to do so if the church doesn't have any problem with it. Can you imagine Reverend Hellfire and Brimstone standing up there? Reverend Hellfire, what do you think about having guns in church? Well, I'm all for it there, boy. A member of the Virginia House of Delegates, a Republican, oh, there's a surprise, from Fredericksburg, requested the opinion from the Attorney General. His name is Mark Cole. Cole sponsored a bill in 2010 that would have allowed someone with a concealed gun permit to carry a concealed handgun into a place of worship during a religious meeting. The bill failed to get out of the committee in the Virginia House called the Militia, Police, and Public Safety Committee, a panel that normally is friendly to pro-gun legislation. Ooh. But anyway, the Attorney General's Cuccinelli, Attorney General of Virginia, said the law governing firearms in churches, quote, has been the source of multiple inquiries to this office, end quote. Well, hell yeah. I mean, how can you have an evangelical Christian church worship service without everybody packing? I mean, get real. What? What? Are you some kind of a freakish liberal that thinks that the house of the Lord should be a place of peace? Boy, you've never looked at the verses of Onward Christian Soldiers before, have you? And then finally, a letter from Montreal, Quebec. Bonjour, Monsieur Malloy. I am writing to you from Montreal, Quebec. About 3 years ago, I deeply fell in love with an American boy. He later introduced your work to me. I have to admit that though I can relate to probably 90% of what you say, you really get on my nerves. I can only take you in small doses. My boyfriend finds it odd because we usually get along pretty well when it's time to turn the radio on. We are both radio lovers. However, you are the only host with presence in our house. Which presence in our house provokes a tension between us? I believe it can be explained by the fact that in Quebec, the loud American way of radio hosting is not much part of our culture. We rant, but we rant otherwise. But even if you get on my nerves, I got a thank you for something. As we say here, toujours redonner à César ce qui lui revient. I guess that means give to Caesar what is Caesar's. My love often tells me that if it hadn't been for you, he would not have made it through the last decade. Listening to you had the effect of Prozac on his brain. Your words and rants made it possible for him to somehow control or avoid a depression. The other good news is that unlike Prozac, you did not take the libido out of him. Now that I have thanked you, I have a favor to ask. My boyfriend was happy to meet a Canadian. On top of love, he found a country with health care and plenty of other goodies. The thought of getting away from ignorance, religion insanity, moral crusades, and corporation reign was very appealing to him. Sadly, he did not get here at the most glorious time of Canadian history. He got here in Harper's term. She says Harper's area, but she's talking about Stephen Harper, the former PM there. The glory days of people with too much money, faith, and power. Today, CBC aired a topic about some internet and radio advertisements produced by Canadian evangelists. They're encouraging people to vote at the 2011 federal election. That may not sound shocking to an American, but for a Canadian, even more, being a Quebecois, it is not only shocking, but traumatizing. Not only is it the first time I see them get that much presence and influence, she's talking about the evangelicals, these advertisements are the sickness conservative, are the sickest conservative ones I have ever seen. They're up there with the New York billboard with the black girl on it. Oh, she's referring to those billboards that said there is a Holocaust against people trying to kill black children, the ones that tried to restrict even further women's right to privacy. But anyway, the parents who let their babies in these ads should lose child custody. Poor kids, they must be so scared when they go to bed at night. So, here we go. To avoid me falling into the same darkness my boyfriend floated with, could you please listen to the ad and then give it a good rant? I think I am, sadly, ready for you. And then she includes, we've posted this at our website, the video that I want you to look at. So you can go to MikeMalloy.com and you'll see the Canadian Christian video. And they use little children in this, dear little children, beautiful, gorgeous, the kind that the people in Wisconsin beat with rods with the diameter of a quarter because they're 8 months old and they cry in church. But I want you to look at the video. And the children are just captivating. They're beautiful. They're so sweet. They're so loving. And they already have scrambled brains that somehow, one hopes someday they will have the money to get into therapy and unscramble. But this is what the Christian evangelicals, the real crazy, the rapture-ready psychopaths, are what they are doing now, invading Canada. Not to say that Canadians don't already have some of these people homegrown, but these are American ad companies that are putting these things together in order to influence. I want you to look at it. Did you enjoy church tonight? We would appreciate it if you, as you leave the sanctuary, you put a little in the poor box. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.